Hello, everybody, and welcome again to the Good Trash Genre Cast, a podcast where some people gather around computers for now and talk about the movies you're never going to discuss in a film studies course. And this movie, this week's movie, is definitely no exception to that rule.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So it's a little weird. I am Arthur, and I am joined by...
I am, of course, Dalton, and Arthur is short-selling himself. Truly one of our finest modern film critics working today, taking so bravely the reins of this show as our usual master of ceremonies, Dustin, has to hunker down and double dad duty during some quarantining. So,
yeah,
much love, buddy.
It's always weird when he's not here, but we make the ship float long enough to get by. But
that's absolutely right.
This week's episode is going to be a little different. We were going to bring you Searching from 2018, I think, was that year.
Yes.
So with Dustin on the back burner right now, we wanted to wait for him so you could get the full rundown there. So we decided to do a little filler episode. We're going to talk about another movie in its place, and then we're going to do some Fired Up in Pop Culture, which we haven't done here on the mainstream in a long time. And this week film is Unfriended. We thought it would be fun to do a little precursor to Searching. I think, and Dalton, you'll probably correct me here, but I really feel like this was a 2015 release, and if I believe it's the first one to kind of incorporate this screen capture technique of doing found footage, but from the perspective of like a Zoom or a Skype or what have you.
It is 2014. It turns out there are, at least according to what has been collated on Wikipedia, three entries prior to this.
Okay.
The very earliest being The Collingswood Story from 2002, which I would really like to find.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's always somebody that gets to it way earlier than you think.
I figured there was some indie movie that did it.
Yeah.
Like some small low budget thing. This was obvious. This was Blumhouse and Universal. So
yep.
I was wondering if there was like a smaller one that maybe beat them to the punch.
Then there's The Den from 2013, a Russian film that I know some people like. There's some affection for that one out there. And Megan is Missing from 2011.
I've heard of Megan is Missing. Yeah.
Yeah.
That kind of came back into the parlance, I think, last year. I remember seeing a lot of talk about it. I think the TikTokers were finding it or something. Yeah.
Well, and then, of course, this film comes out contemporaneously with Open Windows, with Elijah Wood and Sasha Gray.
I don't know that one.
Which I've seen. Well, that one's pretty good.
Is it a similar premise?
No, it's much more similar to Unfriended: The Dark Web, which I haven't actually seen, but I am vaguely aware of. Yeah, it's Open Windows is good. It's interesting. There's fun twists and turns. I don't want to get too much into it since we're not talking about it today.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. I mean, Unfriended is kind of the big first one,
yeah.
Right? It's the one that sort of made a bunch of money that people were talking about for, you know, a month, however long things stick around in the discourse these days.
Yeah, Blair Witch obviously wasn't the first found footage film, but it was the one that made it famous. And I think that's kind of where we're at with Unfriended. So, well, cool. Well, we're going to do that. We're going to give a review, kind of a spoiler review for Unfriended, and then we're going to move into Fired Up Pop Culture. Dalton, why don't you, for those who may have not seen Unfriended yet, why don't you give them a synopsis?
In a world filled with screens, one movie asks, what if the screens was a movie? And what if on those screens were a big suicide content warning up top, five very, very rude teens, and a haunted broadband connection? This is 2014's Unfriended.
I thought you were going to say in a world where the screens watch back.
Oh, that would have been good, too. Yeah, look, I really just wanted to get kind of stuck in a screens and screens and screens language loop there.
That's fun.
Yeah, that a weird movie. Good. That's what happens, though. Yeah, right? Did I get it?
Yeah, it was fun. I liked it. So I have seen this before. I remember watching this on my laptop, which is, we can get into that in a minute because I think that's a really fun way to watch this. I don't know if you watched it on your computer.
I did. I watched it in the, well, here's a quick plug up top, get out of the way. I watched it in the Praise Downs Discord server. We streamed it.
I was wondering.
You could join that too if you go over to at the Praise Down on Twitter and join their pinned tweet. It's a link to the Discord server. But anyway, yeah, we did watch it in there, and I watched it on my computer. And yeah, it's very surreal to watch that way. I thought I remembered you seeing this one in theaters for some reason, because I do remember you kind of being on the wagon for this one pretty early after its release.
I wasn't, actually. We'll get into that, though.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
For some reason, I remember you banging the drum on this.
Not this. I do next week's film. I think we won't get into the spoiler alert, but yeah, not so much Unfriended, but it stuck with me. But this was your first time watching it, so why don't you break it open for us a little bit here? But what were your initial kind of thumbs up, thumbs down on this one?
Yeah, not a big fan. I gotta be honest. There's fun to be had here, right? Like, I think, and what we're gonna get a little bit. I know, listener. If you're a longtime enjoyer of the show, we usually stay a little spoiler light in this first section, but we're kind of doing like a weird bonus episode this week, so I think we're going to get pretty spoilery pretty quickly, so I'll avoid that, but you'll start to get a vibe when I'm going that direction. But I was not kidding with my synopsis. The movie literally opens on a suicide, which is, I don't know, man, a way to open a movie, I guess. Yeah, a choice, that's for sure. We then go pretty quickly to some hastily aborted screen sex and meet the rude teens that bullied this girl to death.
Yeah.
Which is pretty, you know, I mean, that's what we're getting up top. Like, I don't think the movie, it's, you know, a tight 80-some-odd minutes, so it doesn't really waste any time kind of laying out what's going on. They're being haunted by the ghost of this person, and these five dipshits refuse to admit they're being haunted. And that's, it's very old-school horror in that way, right? Like, it is very morality tale type horror movie making. And I don't know, there's something there for that, I think there's something there in that old style mode of telling a scary story. And I mean, that is truly one of the oldest forms of scary storytelling that we have, right? Is these morality tales that say, you know, don't go down by the river by yourself, or some bloated corpse will drag you under, which is what you say so your little kids don't drown, right? Don't go into the woods, there's a witch that'll eat you. Because it's very easy to get lost in the woods. I mean, that's just very classic human storytelling. And this is very much in that mode of be nice on the internet, or you'll hurt someone's brain too bad, and then they'll haunt you to death. What the film chooses to do with that premise is often bad and upsetting, and just kind of, I don't know, mean-spirited, I guess, is the first word that comes to mind. And again, I don't think that's necessarily a problem in this type of story, right? I think it's okay to have mean protagonists. It is just kind of bullying these protagonists right back, right? Like, it's not that this movie has empathy for the deceased Laura Barnes. It just really hates these five kids that bullied her.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I'm glad to get that heat check from you. I was wondering if that's where you were at with it as well.
This is, I do remember watching it, and really what sticks with me, I think the bones, and really from a mode of a filmmaking standpoint, I think the bones of this are really interesting. I think the idea of the Zoom movie, or the Skype, you know, 5 years ago it was Skype, right? And we've all moved on from Skype, but that idea of taking a movie based in your computer screen is fascinating evolution of found footage.
Yeah, it's such a kind of weird liminal space, right? Mm-hmm. Like, even when you are engaging with the screen, it's weird. And then to go ahead and say, all right, well, let's make that a movie. It is an interesting choice. And I think I saw last week's or next week's movie Searching in theaters. And I think it is a very weird experience to see a giant computer screen movie.
It is.
And then to, again, you said your first watch of Unfriended was also on a computer screen. It is so weird to watch one of these screen movies on an actual, you know, PC screen, which I had not, you know, all these other ones I had either seen in theaters or watched on television in the living room. Just a very surreal experience. So I'm right there with you. I think the bones of it, there's something interesting.
Yeah. And so I really do, you know, and we'll obviously kind of continue that discussion, I think, next week. But I think with Unfriended, the things about it, I like the links they go to make it look authentic, insofar as the web browsers, the sites they're going to, the Facebook chat with the side messages, and everybody's, there's like several messages, different character names, probably named for producers or people who made the movie. And they're like snippets of messages, and then there are, you know, little ads on the site. Like, I like that attention to detail to make all of that unique, and it makes it feel lived in. But I think it's a great setup for a horror film because of how uncanny it is. But the idea of these six god awful teens
Yeah, I said five. I did, of course, forget about
There's Val.
Val.
It's the worst of it, I think, other than Laura.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, man. I think Jess gets a pretty bad.
I think you're right. I think one character I do kind of feel bad for by the end of the movie, because she's just like, so not as wrapped up into it as the others. And
absolutely. And I think Jess sort of epitomizes the movie's like deeply misogynistic tendencies, right? Like, and again, this is horror is a genre that has some of that shit, and I'm not saying you can't do that in a horror film and say something, right? Like, I think plenty of great horror films operate in those sort of the theme of gender. This mm-hmm. movie, God, has never met a woman before, ever.
Wow.
Has never probably didn't have a lot of friends in high school because it was very mean to people, which I think kind of, again, I like the idea of sort of seeding what's going to kill all of these evil teens, right?
Yeah.
And the movie wraps around on literally every single one of them. Whatever you think is going to happen, that's what happens.
Yeah.
It's just very goofy. It could be cool. It does not execute very well.
Yeah.
And I think part of that is how unlikable everyone is.
And that was my qualms the first, you know, I think it starts as a great slow burn, but my qualms the first time I watched it was I can't care about any of these people. And that really, especially in the last 30 minutes when they're just yelling nonstop, it's just noise. Mm-hmm. It's just so noisy that none of it matters. And I think there's maybe a bit of authenticity to that, but it's also not good movie making.
Yeah, they're peeking out the audio levels, right?
Yeah.
To make it like shouting on an actual call, but good God, it's not aesthetically pleasing film in any way. Yeah, I get what you're absolutely. I think that's what they were going for, is that sort of verisimilitude of the online experience, but it's bad. it's bad to have happen in your movie.
And I think you know, it's a fine premise, this, you know, the haunted computer, and I think that, you know, 80 minutes is still a little too long in the tooth for this story. I mean, there's you know, Host from last year is kind of the spiritual successor of this in the Zoom meeting generation of quarantine, and I think Host got it right by sticking to that 60 minute time frame. Just enough to, you know, even tighter with the plotting. And so even 80 minutes starts to feel a little long for Unfriended. But it's hard, kind of hard to, you know, get too into this. You know, the performances seem fine. Again, I think that the star of the film is the mode of filming, is that screen capture technique they're using. I think that's really where it shines, and it's kind of the end of it.
Yeah, you're absolutely. I mean, like the diegetic Spotify, right? That's fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's cute. And again, I think that sort of cold, clinical, detached opening, I get what they're going for, right? Like the sort of the way in which online interaction kind of sets people back at a remove and can encourage hostility where there might be a understanding, right, in that person-to-person space. I think there's ideas, but I'm right there with you. The star of the show is what they're trying to accomplish, not what it actually ends up on the screen.
Yeah. So
I do like that the movie jumps on board with the ghosts so fast. I wish the kids got on board with ghosts so fast, because I finally was like, oh, they're admitting it's a ghost finally. Okay. And then I was like, oh, never mind. The movie's almost over.
Yeah. Yeah. It's weird. That's a weird bit.
Hanging up three times to try and shake the call is very funny. It's very funny to me. I don't know if it was supposed to be funny, but it did make me laugh for whatever that's worth. I'm also very confused by the chat roulette SOS get into some late in the game stuff. Like, nobody makes a choice that makes sense, and that's kind of frustrating in a horror
movie. I know. Yeah, it's a struggle. Like, oh, I'm just gonna carry my laptop around the house to see what's going on, or, you know, or my phone. I guess for some of them, it was kind of weird. And, you know, why don't you just, you know, call the cops? Or I'm sure there's a way to alert somebody other than chat roulette. I was also confused because she shared her screen and then she started looking at a bunch of stuff that was like private. So I was like, what's going on there?
Yeah, she never turned off her screen share.
Or anytime she like changed a window, it muted the conversation, which I didn't think that was a Skype feature.
But, no, I'm pretty sure it's not. I'm pretty sure you gotta, you know, mute it first.
Yeah.
Weird choices are made throughout, including the choice to not let anybody be motivated in anything resembling emotional reality. That's a choice, I suppose.
Let's go back. You talked about that, you know, tale as old as time parable element of this movie. This obviously the big thing here, the kind of premise and the setup is about cyberbullying, and that's the theme throughout. How do you feel about, I mean, that theme? I mean, did it ever come up? I mean, how heavy handed did it feel to you?
Deeply, deeply heavy handed, right? Because the Central Six bullies are so kind of hateful, right? There is nothing. I mean, one of them turns out to be a rapist. Is something we learn. Like that's the kind of casually we learn that information, and it kind of equates that dude's actions with, I don't know, everybody else in the movies. Like I don't even know what Ken did that was so bad. He had to die by blender. I guess he is kind of a turd.
He was the annoying, and he like was the tech guy. Like he's the one that tried to like anti-Trojan the computers, and that was enough to get him killed. His cardinal sin. And then Adam's over here admitting to roofing girls and whatever he did to the Blair or whatever her name is.
Yeah, which that's the whole, I think they say it's consensual love triangle between Blair, Mitch, and Adam is a gross, weird, very high school-y element. Again, it really is playing with, and this will, I'll make sure to get this element in to make Dustin happy. We're dealing with some pretty terrible bourgeoisie kids, right? Like these kids go to a rich high school, no question.
Yeah, all these kids are getting into fine schools no matter what they do. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. And so it does have that element too, right? Like it really wants us to hate these kids. It really truly stacks the deck against them. The problem with that is I don't think the movie knows who's good and who's bad. And I think there are some people in this core group that are not that, like you said, Jess like is fairly sympathetic. Mitch is not. Mitch is a little too like possessive in a way that's upsetting. Again, Ken, I don't know. Ken gets the worst of it in a way that sucks. Because he's, other than being mean to Val, isn't that bad. Although
Ken's
just
trying to get stoned and eat salsa. Like that's
deal. He's having a chill Friday or Monday night. God, that's the thing that made me laugh was realizing this movie took place on a Monday.
Did it? I don't think I connected that.
Yeah,
dot.
Top right of the film. I looked.
Well, they
up
have
the
test
the
tomorrow. That's right. It is a school night.
Yeah, it's a school night. Being menaced by Garfield on this terrible, terrible day. It doesn't work for me. And I think it is because the film's so mean-spirited. It would have to anchor us to someone, right? And it tries to do that with Blair and huge. Now we're fully removing the spoiler shackles now. Blair is the one that filmed the passing out and pooping video that
even talk about yet.
That pushed. Yeah, we haven't even gotten to. Laura killed herself. R.I.P. Laura. I don't know. Should I go look up the hotline? I don't. That seems like a bit much, but listener, there's a hotline out there. Or call somebody, you know. It sucks that this movie is like so cavalier with suicide. Yeah. But anyway, Laura killed herself because of the poop video. And then, of course, her ghost, possesses everybody else and makes them kill themselves. It seems to be
how
that works. Yeah. But again, Blair attempts to backpedal the entire movie. And that really is, I guess, the entirety of the third act. Like we sort of get a little bit of that throughout the film, but really the last run of the movie where they're playing Never Have I Ever is just about them all being mean, spiteful liars. And it equates some lies with other lies that should probably not be equated with one another in a way that for the film to be a successful morality tale, it would have to have the moral high ground. There we go. That's what I've been talking around this whole time. And I think that's where I'm at with it. That sort of classic genre or classic trope, rather, is good if you know how to use it.
Yeah.
Tropes aren't bad in and of themselves, but when they're deployed thoughtlessly, it's just going to hurt you. There's no way around it.
Especially
when you murder somebody with a curling iron.
Oh yeah. And that's another, you know, I think that's the other thing I disliked about this film. Like each of those kills, they just felt like jump scare, gotcha type bits, you know, the hand in the blender and the knife through the eye. Like it just felt like the cheapest way to to get a spook out of it.
Yeah, my buddy Harper, who was on the line when we were watching it, I think it called it really well by pointing out, like, right as Ken's about to get it going, and now the screen's going to jump around a little bit, mm-hmm. and we're going to get some quick cuts. Yep. Like, yeah. Everybody was like, if you've seen a movie before, you know what this film's going to do. This movie is good for, I don't know, 14-year-olds who snuck into an R-rated movie. I think that's who this is for. This was for people who were born in the year 2000. And it's just not for us. There's no universe in which you and I, like, get on board with this movie, I don't think.
Yeah.
We would have had to have seen it prior to most of the other horror movies we've ever seen. We would have had to have seen it at a sleepover, right?
Yeah. Yeah. This
we just...
A bunch of kids are on Netflix discovering this movie right now and
I don't know.
Falling in love with it.
I don't know. Zoomers, what's up? I guess older Zoomers and who are finding it now, young Zoomers who saw it in theaters, who snuck in. What's the deal? Where are we at on this one? I'd like the heat check. I don't know. I think it's bad.
What was the, you watched it with the Praise Down Discord. What was the kind of consensus? Is it pretty evenly? I saw a couple of people's reviews on Letterboxd, so I was kind of.
Yeah, Kirsten kind of went to bat for it, right? Our friend of the show, Kirsten Thirkelson, the Frival Femme herself. She enjoyed it, but I think that's kind of coming from a place of she's seen so much worse horror movies. And I value that opinion. I don't know. I've seen bad ones too, but I don't know. Being 80 minutes long does not make you any more enjoyable to watch. You know, at a certain point, you cross a Rubicon of being a huge bummer.
Yeah.
And if you were not fun, what was the point of you being a huge bummer to me? Like, it doesn't, and I guess that's where the metric falls, right? It does not ever fully cross it into so bad it's good territory. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, I guess we had a good time. I think the consensus was nobody was mad they watched it. Alex was very tickled that this is now maybe the fifth horror movie he's seen.
Really?
So, yeah, he just hadn't seen very many.
That's
he did watch Day of the Dead with me, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, which, you know, that's a... Look, if you're not going to have very many horror movies under
that's
your belt...
That's a good one to,
Exactly.
Yeah, you said
so that was the group consensus was, well, I guess there were worse ways to spend 80 minutes. But it was very fun to watch the group chat horror movie with a group chat, if nothing else.
Yeah, it's a fun, little meta thing. Well, is there anything else we want to hit on with this movie before we... move on.
Searching's better. And next week we'll talk about that movie.
And
again, I don't think this is the worst movie ever made, right? Like, I've seen worse films. I've seen even more detestable teens that I couldn't wait for them to die faster. And not just because I'm a masochist or a sadist, because that would mean the movie was over.
Yeah.
I guess really is the problem with this sort of movie. The movies that try to make the audience be sadists just make me want the movie to be over.
I am really curious. You bring up the dislikable pro tags thing. I was wondering, I watched, I don't know if you've ever seen The Gallows. I think it was around this same time.
Mm-hmm.
That was another found footage film in a high school when there's like a haunted play or something. I don't remember. But anyway, I remember that one also, I think, having a similar dislikable teens thing. Mm-hmm. And I wonder how much of that is a screenwriter, a director, just not understanding the culture and trying to make a movie about, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
A disconnect in that regard.
It's funny you brought up a horror, found footage horror film, because I was thinking about As Above, So Below, which, man, am I mad that great title got used on a very bad movie. But Ben Feldman's in it from Mad Men and Superstore. Mm. I like him.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Same problem. It's everybody's such a shit in that film. Like, it does not understand how to make people likable. It is cool that they do end up in hell. Like, that's fun.
Yeah.
At least something cool happens in that movie, I guess, is the problem.
Yeah.
With Unfriended, not only is everybody just the worst, nothing cool happens. Like, it doesn't follow through on the kind of weird, time-bendy feel of being online, right? I think this movie that, hate to reference somebody that we now know is a creep in real life, but the movie Wounds, the Hannibal the Cannibal himself, Armie Hammer, and Dakota Johnson, Zazie Beetz, like, not a great movie at all, but does do something with that idea of, like, being sucked into the internet, right? Like, I think it does something with that idea. It gets a little weird with it. Unfriended doesn't have, it just doesn't have the time for it, right? Yeah. Like maybe you and I could both get on board with these terrible protagonists if instead of just like kind of boringly murdering them, it it did something like the Blair Witch Project, which we mentioned earlier. It gives us something kind of weirder and spookier and doesn't give us violent catharsis, gives us confusion. I don't know. There's fun to be had here, but you'll be glad when it's over.
Yeah, yeah. I strongly agree with that. So, well, all right. I think the verdict is pretty out on this, and I say we're both trashing this one, but...
Yeah, don't watch it. Watch Searching and get ready for next week.
Yeah, strongly suggest that. We'll get into that. I don't want to give too much away in that conversation, but... next week, you can join us to talk about Searching. I'm very excited for that one, and hopefully Pops will be back with us. I think it's time. Dalton, are you feeling a little hot and bothered? Are you a little warm under the collar?
Ooh, do you know it's a warm Sunday evening? We just lost an hour of time, and I'm all kinds of weird and wiggity. Yeah, baby, I'm fired up. Let's go.
Let's talk about what's got us fired up in pop culture this week. And time period, I guess. We don't do it weekly anymore, so.
Yeah, it's kind of a, look, it's fun to bring back the old what's the segment? There we go. We did it on the Patreon for a little bit. That was fun, right? But, you know, now that we've been playing a lot of table topping on hiatus briefly while we're all getting healthy. You know, we switched to playing tabletop for our Patreon subscribers.
Yeah.
I would like to, you know, maybe in the future when we can afford to be together a little bit more, we could go back to doing Fired Up as another piece of bonus content. But yeah, we don't do that very often. So I'm glad to revisit the old segment chat.
Yeah, it's exciting. So for those who haven't ever heard this, we're just going to kind of go back and forth talking about some of the pop culture things that we're excited about, that we've been watching, listening to, playing, or maybe have gotten us upset. It's kind of a dual fire there. So Dalton, what do you got for us? What's the first thing you're fired up about?
Well, we'll start with the reverse side of the coin. To paraphrase Open Mike Eagle, I looked up what Piers Morgan said, and I shouldn't have.
Yeah,
it's weird what ends up dominating the discourse in the time of hyper-fragmented culture, right? Like, it's weird that I should have to have Paramount Plus to even have like the barrier to entry for what's going on right now.
Yeah.
I don't have Paramount Plus. I couldn't have been bothered to watch the thing about how the Royals are racist. Big surprise. I mean, it's good that that's like out in the open now, I guess. But it's a bummer. The whole thing sucks all the way around. And it sucks that people are being mean about people's mental health. It sucks that somebody is having to do with their spouse what they did with their mother when they were a kid. It sucks that somebody's having to go through this because of who they married. It's a bummer all the way around, and it sucks. And don't bother looking up what mean people are saying about other people's mental health. I guess maybe it's good that we talked about this on the Unfriended episode. If nothing else, is like, you know, normalize talking about it. And if you hear or see somebody being a jerk, and not taking somebody seriously when they talk about their brain, I don't know, challenge that person. And, you know, maybe bully them into firing. This is the time when it's okay to bully. Cancel culture is not real. It just is okay to bully somebody into quitting their job if they're being a dick to everybody else. That's how it works when you work in the restaurant industry. I don't see why it can't work for the rest of the world.
Yeah.
That's kind of the only other like bad thing we can... Well, let me ask you this, Arthur. You've been watching WandaVision? Did you check that out?
You know what? I was about to bring it up. I was going to segue into it to talk about, you know, grief and mental health. And yeah, WandaVision.
Yeah, well, and let's go ahead. I also want to kind of talk about the discourse around WandaVision. So let's go ahead and just, boom, move over right into that and talk about what ate the internet for about 10 weeks.
Yeah, it's wild, isn't it? The MCU's first long-form TV show. And here we are 9-10 weeks later.
Yeah, not counting the no longer canon, if ever it was, Netflix stuff. We've got big stars in this one. Not only do we have big stars, we've got the full press lead up of confusing fans and making them want more crossovers that aren't going to happen, right? The whole, it ran the gamut. It was exactly like the run up to a Marvel movie, but while it was happening.
Yeah. Yeah,
which makes sense.
Exactly.
It's fascinating. And also, of course, that was how this show was experienced by the world, was just take that weird press run up to a Marvel movie and stitch it into a week by week thing. And there you have it. What did you like? What did you think, rather? Did you like the show? Or what did you like about the show, I guess?
Overall, I did. We got a Keisha and I. We actually, it was kind of fun because, you know, every weekend it was our thing to do, you know, or every Friday night even. We'd try to sit down and watch. It was kind of a fun, weird, you know, throwback kind of moment. And I think the format of the show really fed into that, you know, this kind of sitcom satire that they did for the first several episodes. And that was, you know, leading into this, you know, it's been like, what, 15 months or something since we've had a Marvel anything. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, to kind of get back into that groove was kind of interesting. But this, I think, series of all the series they had announced at the time, this is the one I had most looked forward to just because it seemed like it could get the weirdest in a lot of ways.
Yeah. And sure, I was definitely on board with it.
Yeah, and I really love that idea of the sitcom thing, the 50s, the 60s. Like, I think that's so fun. So I appreciated that. You know, I saw people kind of complaining that it was off to a slow start, and there were a couple, I think, fillery type episodes that they could have sped up. Or I think episode 3 was the one where I was like, okay, I think we need to move it along a little bit. But I like where it went. I really enjoyed spending more time with Wanda because I feel like she's been really underserved in the main series anyway. So I think it's good to just get time for that character to kind of breathe.
Absolutely. This is not an original observation, obviously, but I've seen it said that this is the best she's gotten to be since Martha Marcy May Marlene. And absolutely. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. She 100%. She just gets to be good in something. And that's fun.
Yeah.
And Catherine Hahn, of course, is just doing donuts the whole time.
Yeah. That brilliant casting right there. It's just smart casting with Catherine Hahn. She's so much fun, and it's great to get to see her kind of play out the live action version of her Doc Ock from Spider-Verse.
Yeah, apparently the scuttlebutt is, and I'm sure you are aware of this, but listener, if you're not, sort of the way casting works in this weird media empire is Marvel calls you in for a meeting. And they don't necessarily have you in mind for something, but they just want to kind of basically job interview you if you're going to be, you know, big name villain or superhero. Or even, I think even with Tayana Paris, they brought her in as well. Just said, hey, we don't have anything just yet, but would you be interested? And that's sort of how it works. And I guess Catherine Hahn had a meeting quite a while ago. And they said, yeah, we're going to have you. And I agree. It's a fun way to build the universe, right? Is to have actors on deck and then just wait for comic book characters to present themselves that just perfectly align with an actor's persona, which is what they did with RDJ, right? Like, they're just kind of stretching that formula out for, you know, over a decade now. And it's good casting. I agree. I think it was very funny to me to watch people get mad at both the show and then also get mad at people because they either didn't like the show or didn't like the show the same way that they did. Yeah. Right. There's a lot of, wow, isn't this show genius because it said a pretty rudimentary thing about grief? Or which versus don't like that a show said something to you about grief, you dumb idiot. Right? Like, both of those are dumb. Like, yes, I think that the show is sweet, says a sweet thing, but it is also, it's not the most genius thing in the world.
Yeah.
It's just a sitcom, folks. It's a $100 million sitcom. Take it for what it is. Yeah. I think it's very fun. But I think... it was interesting to me, and I don't know where you're at with it, but it was very interesting to see both the fan theory discourse and the general, like, critical reaction slash audience reaction unfold in real time.
And it's definitely a situation where when, you know, to spread this out over 9 weeks, to build anticipation like that, it's nigh impossible, I think, to meet the demand that people are wanting for that finale. And so, it was interesting to kind of see that back and forth. And you know, we're about to enter the week of the capital D discourse, I'm sure, as a certain movie drops in a few days or after this. Actually, it'll be out before this posts on Friday. So
what movie is that?
The hashtag Snyder Cut.
Oh, you're beating around the bush a little bit, so I wasn't sure. Yeah that'll be, gosh.
I feel like if I say it, they just... that they know.
They'll find us. Yeah.
Yeah.
there'll be a Google alert for it. Yeah. Are they dropping that week to week, or is that coming out all at once?
I think it's coming out one at one. I think it's a 4-hour movie.
Wow. Okay, good.
Yeah, I think they're dropping it on Thursday, and that's it. So I'm, you know, talk about discourse. That should eat up the weekend.
Yeah, look, I can't wait. I truly, I cannot wait to see what people say about it. More than I want to watch it, which I probably will find the time to do.
Yeah.
Gosh, I'm just glad it'll be over. I say yeah. Before we get come, you know, early next year and people are shouting about should the Snyder Cut be eligible for Oscars, which,
oh yeah,
God help us.
we live in society.
Where are you at with Falcon and Winter Soldier? Are you excited about that one? That one's getting right. I think by the time this episode drops, I actually think this episode's debuting today. Yeah.
Yep, yeah.
Excited? You
know, it's the one I was least excited about. I'm mainly excited to see Daniel Bruhl get to do something.
I'm kind of excited
for me.
I get that. I'm excited for the MCU Lethal Weapon, right?
Yeah.
Like I'm kind of there for that premise, but I'm right there with you. Loki was the one I became most excited about when I found out it was a time travel show.
I saw that trailer. Yeah, yeah, that's the one I'm into.
I kind of was agnostic about it until reveal of time travel, and I was like, all right, well, that sounds dope.
Yeah,
I guess it'll be fun. I'm sure there'll be even more frustrating discourse around Falcon and Winter Soldier because
the
military stuff. There's going to be two sides of that discourse, both of which could get annoying.
Yeah, I was going to say even the discourse just around the trailers and kind of the lackluster events of what we've got these kind of multi-dimensional stories, but then there's just the buddy series, or whatever.
Love that,
so.
Though. I like that it's simple and straightforward, and I like that there's going to be good fist fights. You know, that's all that I need.
And I'm kind of curious how much of this one isn't going to kind of deal with some of that same grief, of losing Cap. That seems to be the big impetus of the story. It looks like I'm assuming they've created the U.S. agent as a filler, and now Sam and Bucky are trying to deal with that. But I am curious to kind of see where it goes. I forgot U.S. agent was in it until a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I think it'll be fun. I guess a good way to get out of this this darn Marvel hole we're in is to briefly talk about the most recent Scorsese letter, which I haven't actually read.
I haven't either.
Need to catch up with. The gist of it, from my understanding, is it's mostly just about, hey, man, like, don't say content. It's a bummer. they say it to mean cat videos and Buñuel movies, right? Like, just don't. We need to make movies are their own thing, and I just kind of wish everybody would let them be their own thing. And people are going to come sideways at Marty and be mad at him for not liking, Jurassic Park 4 or whatever.
Yeah.
I get what he's saying. I absolutely get what he's saying. I think it's funny to say content in an ironic sort of way, right? Like, that's silly. Yeah. There is something there. I think at the end of the day, we do absolutely need to start getting serious about preservation of film, especially with the pivot to digital, right? We need to make sure that things stay in existence, even if that means, making digital restorations of things and getting them on services. But yeah, people, people deserve to know about old stuff, man.
Yeah.
That's how media grow, is that we can keep going back and digging through it and picking out the cool stuff from the movies of yore and finding ways to do those same things in different contexts, right?
Yeah. And you know, that's what I really appreciate about HBO Max is that depth of
catalog.
Yeah. Catalog. To even think, the movies that are in there from the 90s for kids these days, that's like us finding movies from the 50s and 60s when we were kids. That's kind of the odd parlance of it is, the movies that we grew up with are now the classics for these kids.
It's fine. Like, there's some good movies in there, but man, there's like some really great stuff from the 60s and 70s that is just kind of getting lost in the lurch, right?
I know.
It's weird that even films that recent are that
hard to find.
Right? I can see. I would not be surprised we've already lost a lot of silent film, but it's not surprising when that stuff's not on there, right? It's not surprising when the selections from the 30s are pretty slim.
Yeah.
But man, when the selections from like New Hollywood or whatever are slim, like that's such a big moment in American film, right?
Yeah.
Even if we're just talking about American centric streaming services.
Yeah.
It is as bad and dumb as the streaming wars are getting. It's nice to have some of those big old studio catalogs getting put out on the internet.
Yeah.
It's something, if nothing else.
Yeah.
You watch anything else that you're... Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, I've been tempted several times to just, you know, cancel the Netflix and just double down on HBO Max and some of these other services, because I just think what they're offering is so much greater value than Netflix at this point.
Yeah, I like to keep it around as an option, but man, I sure did think about canceling it and holding on to my Showtime add-on for Hulu, right?
Oh, yeah.
Which I ended up holding on to the Netflix, but it's a dearth. It's a slog, and it should be fun like a blockbuster. Speaking of, it is weird that they're getting the documentary about the last blockbuster.
Yeah, I saw that. I did see that.
God, it's strange.
Well, you know, and the thing, you know, when we started this podcast, we said we're only going to do Netflix movies, right? That was the thing that we did.
It was the only streaming service, really.
I was going to say, we were going to do movie streaming on Netflix, not Netflix originals, to clarify.
Yeah.
But now, you know, we wouldn't be able to do that because it would either be, you know, the same, you know, 20 to 30 movies on cycle or a bunch of Netflix originals that wouldn't be, I think, worth having the conversation about. So.
Yeah, streaming is perpetually getting better and getting worse in ways that are very interesting.
Yeah,
it's weird. Speaking of things that I like on streaming, the Disney Overlords now owning Hulu and just putting everything that Fox makes on Hulu. Cake is a show that I like very much. I don't think that I've talked about it before.
I don't think I'm familiar with it.
Yeah, so it's an FX show. So, of course, it is getting heavy play on Hulu, both in the promotions and whatnot.
Yeah.
But it is a sketch show, for want of a better way to call it, because sketch doesn't quite capture what it is. It's more a series of short films, maybe, that happen week to week. It's weird. Some of them are animated. Some of them are live action. But it's all very silly.
Interesting.
Yeah, there's a great one called Dicktown in the third season. That's John Hodgman as a boy detective who got old, like that movie that came out last year. That one's fun. It's just, yeah, he's like an old hearty boy, and that one's a hand-drawn animation thing.
Yeah.
So there'll be interstitial ones that are only just a weird one-off for an episode, and then each season there's, you know, one to three kind of recurring sketches that unfold as a narrative over the course of the season.
Huh.
It's got a very fun blend of just gross, esoteric, and or surreal, mixed with, you know, kind of semi-narrativized storytelling.
Yeah.
It's really fun stuff. I strongly recommend to check it out if you like big fat scare quotes here, adult animation, whatever that means. Check it out. Yeah, it's really fun. Like, there's good cartoons, man, and good weird short films that, I don't know, it's not all of them work, but almost all of them are trying to say something, and there's value in that.
Yeah.
Do you have anything you're watching right now that's not for the show?
Yeah, the only thing we're really doing right now is I restarted How I Met Your Mother the other day, speaking of Hulu.
They picked that up?
Yeah, and I think it may have been on there for a while. You know, that's a fun kind of show to look back on because much like Game of Thrones, the ending has completely killed it from the cultural parlance, except for the, the few diehards. You know, I've seen it two or three times though, and I was never as hard on the ending of that. Maybe it's just as I don't take any of this as serious as some people do, but watching back these first, and I had complaints, you know, I it's a show that the studios made go on way too long, and it got really trapped in the circle. But I think some of those first few seasons, they're strong. I think some of the humor hasn't aged well, that mid-aughts humor.
Yeah,
but
Barney kind of sucks, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The mid-aughts were a weird time.
They took all the things about Joey from Friends and dialed it up to 11 in the worst ways. But it's easy to see why Jason Segel became such a great hit after that show.
He's just so lovable.
And Colby Smulders. They're really great. And yeah, Jason Segel, I love him.
And Allison Hannigan's, of course, had comedy chops for years.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a strong cast, man. Like, it makes sense that it ran so long.
Yeah.
I'm mad that they killed Christy Milioti. But, you know, I hate that.
She got the dad, and that's rough. You know, that's hard. But I think of Arrested Development I think it's one of the all-time greats. Those first three seasons of Arrested Development is some of the best comedy I've ever seen, not only because of the humor and the chemistry, but just the narrative structure, the use of language to foreshadow, to be symbolic, the double entendre. And I think a lot of that same DNA is in How I Met Your Mother in those early seasons, the way some episodes are structured, the unreliable narrator in the way stories are told or recollected, and the way it plays with narrative form in that way. I think it has some really smart moments. I don't think it's as good as Arrested Development by any means, but I really do think those first three or four seasons, there's some really interesting ways in which they play with narrative, and I appreciate it about it, and so it's kind of fun to go back through it and be with those characters again. So
yeah, man, it's always good to revisit a sitcom that you're fond of. It's like checking in on old friends, right?
Yeah.
Like I think that's why the Friends or whatever, right?
Is yeah,
so
or The Office,
contested
yeah,
on streaming or
yeah,
not,
yeah.
Which you know, not sitcoms that I like really at all.
And
a lot of that has to do with people who, they're again, I shouldn't say people who like them because that's not what I mean. They're propagation via memes,
yeah.
Right? Like, it's
yeah.
just I'm over it. Friends was a show that I never watched and. A little before my time and never cared to get into it.
Yeah.
The Office just a little soured, but I do understand the impulse because I sure have my shows that I do that with. Right. I think
yeah.
everybody does. Well, do you have anything else? Cause I do have one question I kind of want to take us home on if you don't have anything else, but
well, the only I'll say this and then we can get to your question. So this will be my wrap up.
Okay.
And I dropped this in the Facebook the other day that I'd been watching the SNL music videos.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I love like as far as comedy, like stand up comedy or stuff like that goes. Sort of satirical musical comedy mm-hmm. is one of my favorite things. You know, Flight of the Conchords, Lonely Island, some parody. You know, Weird Al's. You know, got some fun songs, but that more self serious satire version mm-hmm. that we see from those other groups. And so, watching some of these digital shorts from SNL with Chris Redd and Pete Davidson. I tell you what, I don't know that there's a sharper team of musical comedy out there than what they've got going on over at SNL right now. Say
yeah,
what you will about, you know, their the writing, you know, the political humor, whatever. But I think when that cast is on, they're on, and they've got some really great members of that team to make it work. Melissa Villaseñor and
she's great.
Ego. I can't think of Ego's last name. Chris Redd's, I think, very underrated in a lot of ways. But his musical styling is on point. And Keenan, of course.
I'm always a big fan of you making sure to curate what's good happening over on SNL. I've always enjoyed that about you and the time we've been doing the show and the time we've been friends. You're always keeping an eye on what's going on over there. And somebody has to.
Yeah,
it's very important work. It's weird that it's an institution, but it is. So
yeah.
It's good that people keep their eyes on it. And it's weird to see how the Lonely Island kind of changed, like what was considered doable far as like that show's format.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really cool. And I'll tell you what, if any sketch that features Adam Driver is gold.
He's funny, man.
I've seen 15 or 20 with Adam Driver in them, and I don't know if I don't know if it's that the team is excited that he's hosting or if mm-hmm. he just pushes them to another level. But it feels like anytime he's on that show, they can't miss.
It's fair to say, I think, that he might be of like the current generation of actors, right? Like the people who are about our age, right? The currently at peak actor age or whatever for Hollywood considers it. He's one of the stronger guest hosts they've got, man.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't ever disappoint. I don't feel like there's a couple of other folks though that I in that kind of that same his contemporaries, I guess, is the word I'm looking for are good. But yeah, man, you're absolutely right. His are money.
Yeah. So that was it. So that's the last thing I had. What's your question?
Well, I guess this is, like you said, we don't do Fired Up in Pop Culture very often, so we won't have a chance, I don't imagine, before the end of March or even the end of April to talk again about what we're excited about. But Arthur, I got one question for you, baby.
Uh-huh.
Zilla or Kong, where are you at, man? Where are you coming down on?
I've got to go Kong, I think.
Yeah,
I think that's where my heart goes. You know, I've never been a huge Godzilla guy. Mm-hmm. That was not something I ever really got into. And there's just something, I think, a bit more empathetic about Kong, more sympathetic about Kong.
Yeah, I mean, he's a primate, right? Like, they get to do facial animations with him.
Yeah, and you know, I recently I'd never seen 2014's Godzilla. I recently watched that to kind of start getting ready for the matchup. And, you know, I think between that and Kong Skull Island, I think Kong's got the lead. I think Kong Skull Island's a superior movie at just about every turn.
Well, and that's kind of where I get complicated with this, right? I love Kong Skull Island. I think the movie kicks ass. I've only seen it the one time, but I really enjoyed it. I think it's a lot of fun. It's a gentleman's 3.5 in like the most perfect way.
Yeah, exactly.
But I like King of the Monsters a lot too, and that's where I come down. Is I love the thick lizard. You know, I love him. He shoots atomic fire out of his head. He's mad about nukes. He's super cool.
Yeah.
I love the big lizard, even though I think Kong Skull Island is the best of these Monsterverse or whatever they call it movies. I like that big lizard. I like that you have Bradley Whitford yelling about a hollow earth at the second Godzilla movie they did. Look, is the movie going to be dumb? Probably. Will I go see it in IMAX now that I'm vaccinated? I might.
Maybe.
Arthur,
yeah.
I'm thinking about it. That's I don't know. Point.
Yeah.
I'm kind of thinking about it.
That'd be fun. Good one to go back to, though.
That's
right?
Exactly what I was thinking. Listener, may you find victory for your giant monster that you love. Will it be the mighty, mighty kaiju who started the modern monster movie? Or will it be the original big boy, King Kong himself? Find out on March 31st at a streaming platform or a biological hazard with big screens near you. This was fun, Arthur. I like it when we do bonus shows.
Yeah, it's a nice change of pace. Hey, if they wanted to tell us if they were hashtag Team Kong or hashtag Team Godzilla, where would they do that?
Well, they could do that over at good_trash if they're on Twitter. I can't imagine somebody would want to be on Twitter at this point in human history. But if you're already there, it's at good_trash. Let us know. You like the big lizard or do you like the empathetic monkey with his big, beautiful brown eyes? It'll be I want them to hold hands and be friends too. Look, guys, I'm right there. Folks, I love it when people are friends. I love it when big monsters are friends, but they are going to fight and it's going to be cool. Let us know how you feel at good_trash. You can also send your long form feedback to goodtrashgenrecast@ gmail.com. Do you have a dissertation on Unfriended that you think is just, really, going to bat for its genius? Let us know. I'd love to read it. Rate, review, subscribe. You've listened to a podcast before. We're not on Spotify just yet, but you know, those reviews on iTunes help with an algorithm allegedly. So do that if you haven't already. I think it's good Spotify doesn't have podcast reviews. I think it simplifies things. No reviews. Just do you want to follow it or not? I think that's handy. You could also go to the Podbean. That's if you want to do it there. I know Podbean's got like some social media functionality. Good Trash Genre Cast. I already mentioned it, but the Heath and Alex show, The Praise Down is what it's called. It's very good. And they're friends of ours and are, technically part of a network with us. So you should go check them out at The Praise Down on Twitter, The Praise Down with Heath and Alex, wherever fine podcasts are provided to you. You should also check out The Wheel of Randy with Dan Wade, a deep dive into the career of one Randy Newman. It's good stuff. Also got their own Twitter at Wheel of Randy. That's the social media plugs. We're not going to hook Patreon subscriptions right now because we're a little behind on that bonus content. But I will say my wife wanted me to say she really appreciated you sending over Arrival, Arthur.
Oh, yeah.
Becca approved. She loves that
nice.
One. So that's what you get. That's what you get, listener. If you do go to the Patreon and give us some dollars, Arthur will curate a real good selection for you. Send you something you might not already have that you'd like to have access to in physical media. Go figure. I think that's it. I think I'm done. I don't think there's any other relevant social media talk. Arthur, anything you want to tell people other than reminding them next week we're watching Searching?
Yeah, go watch Searching if you have time. Check out Anish Chaganti's second film, Run, which is over on Hulu. I might actually get to squeeze that in now since we've had to delay. Got a lot of positive buzz around this filmmaker, and so I'm excited to see where his career goes. So
according to Hulu, their most successful original film on
launch.
Really? Right. Yeah, which is surprising to me considering Palm Springs.
Yeah,
but I guess Run had their biggest quote unquote opening weekend.
Huh.
However that works.
Sarah Paulson for the win.
Yeah, man, people like Sarah Paulson.
Yeah. So that's what I got. I would like to say you keep watching, and we'll keep talking, and we'll see you all next time.
It's weird when the old man doesn't do it.
not afraid.